This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 24th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 309. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, Freedom of Information Research has revealed a failure to protect BC's dikes and a failure to prevent the flooding disaster of November 2021 in the Interior and the Fraser Valley. My guest is Ben Parfitt of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, who obtained more than 5,000 pages from the provincial and municipal governments. He joins me to discuss his shocking findings. Is it just me, or is the story of the year in Canada foreign interference? For the first 6 months, China hogged the spotlight. A series of Globe and Mail and Global News stories based on leaks from Canada's spy agency put the Trudeau Liberals on their heels. Just in time for the declaration of a public inquiry into foreign interference in September involving China, Russia, and Iran, foreign interference by India took center stage. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, on September 18th, rose in the House of Commons.
Mr. Speaker, today I'm rising to inform the House of an extremely serious matter. I just informed the leaders of the opposition directly, but I want now to speak with all Canadians. Over the past number of weeks, Canadian security agencies have been actively pursuing credible allegations of a potential link between agents of the government of India and the killing of a Canadian citizen, Hardeep Singh Nijjar. Any involvement of a foreign government in the killing of a Canadian citizen on Canadian soil is an unacceptable violation of our sovereignty. It is contrary to the fundamental rules by which free, open, and democratic societies conduct themselves.
Now there is a diplomatic cold war between Canada and India, the country that was supposed to be Canada's trading partner to help decouple from China under the Indo-Pacific strategy. So with Canada supporting Ukraine against Russia, and geopolitical and security disputes with China and India, that only leaves opportunities for Canada to foster closer ties with Brazil and South Africa from the BRICS alliance. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Torrential rains and floods devastated the Interior and Fraser Valley during November 2021's Pineapple Expresses. But provincial, regional, and municipal authorities were not prepared. But they should have been. Local authorities are responsible for maintaining dikes, and they must file annual inspection reports to Victoria, which has the power to investigate and order repairs under the Dike Maintenance Act. A researcher with the BC Office of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives investigated dike inspection reports from 2017 to 2021. Ben Parfitt gathered more than 5,000 pages under the Freedom of Information Law from the municipalities and the Ministry of Forests. He found no evidence that BC's Inspector of Dikes issued any orders to Abbotsford, Chilliwack, Merritt, Princeton, or Richmond. Ben Parfitt of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives is my guest on this week's edition.
It's got a very, very large mandate, and in some ways you've got to wonder if this ministry should be perhaps reorganized so it can focus on its main mandate, which is land use.
That's a very, very good question, Bob. I mean, it used to be the case, for example, that decisions around allocating water rights, which is again something that now resides with the provincial Ministry of Forests, that used to be firmly within the realm of the Ministry of Environment, right? Flood warning used to be within the Ministry of Environment. So, I think that there's questions that need to be asked about where responsibilities properly lie. But beyond that, there's the bigger question of whether the resources are there and whether the will is there to enforce regulations, right? And that's where, you know, I think we're seeing some problems. So in the work that I've just done around the regulation of dikes, what I asked for in the Freedom of Information request was 5 years worth of dike inspection reports, right, which are required under provincial legislation. So every municipal dike authority is required to file these reports every year. So I asked for 5 years of reports from five different municipalities, and I asked for any provincial government responses, including orders, based on their read of the inspection reports that they received. And I got 5,300 pages of documents back, nearly 5,300 pages. And in those 5,300 pages, there is but one single page from the provincial government, which is a single email running to less than a page. And that's it for the provincial record. And yet, the province, we know from this FOI record, got year after year after year of reports containing alarming information about the state of the dikes in the community of Merritt. And there's no order, there's not a single provincial government document acknowledging the problem, let alone saying to Merritt, you must take action now to safeguard public health and safety. There's no record to indicate that the provincial government did a thing. And that is of real concern. The government clearly has powers to order corrective action. If it sees that action is not being taken, it can even initiate the action on its own. And yet we see and have seen no sign of that happening. So the main purpose of this FOI was to test whether inspection reports were being filed. For the most part, they were, although I point out in my research that there were a number of years in which apparently there were no reports filed by the town of Princeton at all. And I also wanted to test out what the provincial government's response was. And sadly, the record indicates that there's been no response at all.
How long did it take to obtain the documents? Was there any resistance by any of the public bodies, provincial or municipal? Did they send you any fee invoices? Did they take any additional time? Did they go to the commissioner for anything?
Yeah, there was some additional time taken. This was not as painful an FOI process as others have been for me. There wasn't huge delay. There was some delay, but not huge delay. And there was no significant attempt to try and get me to pay for the records. There was a bit of a delay. Troubling to me were further attempts at delay after I got the information that I did get. So I had to wait for the information, of course, to figure out what questions to then file with the ministry. And perhaps one of the most troubling responses of all was when I asked for a list of those people in the provincial government who had responsibility for dikes, like just a list of the names of those people who are working in this area. I was told I would have to file a Freedom of Information request just to find out the names of these individuals. And it was at that point that I wrote the ministry back and I said, look, this is ludicrous. You and I can go on to the, can do a Google search under BC Government Directory. And when you get to the BC Government Directory, it spits out any one of a number of names of public servants. So I pointed this out to the ministry and I said, all I'm asking for here are the names. And I hope you're not going to make me report that I have to FOI this. At which point, the next day, suddenly, I had a list of names. So there does appear to, for sure, to be some sensitivity to this. I find it troubling that we would be that someone would consider it appropriate to ask me to file an information request, a formal information request, just to find out who has authority in this area. And, you know, the reason for filing that question, Bob, was very simple. At the time, and I haven't gone back on to look, but at the time, when I did a search on of the government directory, online government directory, there was only a single name in the directory when the word dyke was entered into the search engine. One name. And as it turns out, that person doesn't even have authority for dykes. So the directory there that is out there that is supposed to be there to give the public an understanding of who they can turn to for information is completely out of date. And the first response from the government is to suggest that a freedom of information request has to be filed to find out who's working on our behalf. So there is clearly a lot of sensitivity here. And I, you know, I'm just hoping that this research will shed some light on what the government did, or more to the point, didn't do with information that was put before it that, you know, very, very clearly showed that there were significant problems with the dike infrastructure in Merritt. And, you know, bear in mind that this FOI request, I narrowed it. I only chose five communities. I have no way of knowing you know, what circumstances may be in other regions of the province, but I think we can assume on the basis of this FOI record that there are probably significant problems elsewhere.
Now, the provincial inspector of dikes did not issue one order. Who is the provincial inspector of dikes, and should that person still be employed on our behalf if that person is not going to be taking a proactive role?
Well, that's a very, very good question, Bob. I mean, the provincial inspector of dikes was a position that was set up through provincial legislation going back decades, and that person is there to oversee the regulation of dikes in the province. Under current law, local dike authorities have responsibility for dikes. And we have a provincial dike inspector and people working under her or him that have very explicit powers to actually go out on any dike to survey those dikes. They have powers to look at the reports that are submitted to government. They have powers to through the inspector of dikes to order dike authorities to take action. All of that is very much there and is explicit in the provincial legislation. The provincial government, in response to questions that I filed after I received the FOI package, has stated that in recent years, they didn't define what time period exactly we're talking about, that there had been no order of any kind issued. So as far as I know, there were no issues or orders issued by the last three inspectors of dikes, all of whom were professional engineers. And I have no evidence of any such order being issued. Certainly during the five-year period that I requested records of for only five municipalities, I cannot see evidence of any order. You know, the ministry in response to my question said in recent years, no orders have been issued. So to my way of thinking, that raises questions because if you're a professional engineer working in this province, you have a duty to protect the public, to protect public safety. It's one of the number one duties in the code of ethics, right, that govern the professional engineering body. So to my way of thinking, it raises questions, right? If you're presented with clear evidence that there are significant problems with infrastructure and no indication that a local dike authority has taken action to rectify those problems, clearly you can step in with the provincial legislation in place and you can order corrective action. So it just raises the question why were no orders issued.
Is this a function of maybe apathy on the part of the inspector, or is it a case of the position of inspector having little autonomy, being basically a captured regular in many ways, or is it a bit of both?
You know, it's an excellent question, to which I can only speculate. But one thing that I wonder about, and this was hinted to me in conversations I had with professional engineers who did not want to speak on the record, but it's an interesting hypothesis, which is that if you know that in issuing an order, the outcome is going to be a project that is going to run into the tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to deal with, right? And you know, as a provincial employee, that if you issue such an order, it is going to result in a local authority going cap in hand to the provincial government to say, show me the money, that might temper what it is that you do, right? Because clearly we're not seeing evidence of significant proactive investment by the provincial government on this critical infrastructure. And we know that the costs to deal with this problem are formidable, right? So in 2012, the Ministry of Forests, I'll have to double check the year, it's in my report, the Ministry of Forests issued a report on what it was going to cost to raise the dikes in the lower mainland, the sea dikes, those dikes that hold back seawater. And it was $9.5 billion 12 years ago. It's an order of magnitude more expensive today. And as far as I know, there's been no significant action taken to raise those dikes. So we're talking about a problem that is enormous in scale and cost. We know from what local governments like Merritt are saying that they do not have the money and they don't have the tax base to deal with these things. Therefore, it's something that the province and federal government perhaps together are going to have to deal with, right? And I think that that's the context here that's really important and that may explain why there's been a lack of strong action on the part of dike inspectors, because they understand the context in which this is playing out. And perhaps the message that they're getting is that if they're overzealous in their regulation, it's going to cost a lot of money. I don't know if that's playing away in the background. That's just me thinking out loud about what may possibly explain it, and what was suggested to me by some engineers that I spoke with. But very clearly, the action isn't being taken. And very clearly, the government has the power, should it choose to exercise it, to order corrective action to be taken.
Now, the root cause that you identify goes back 20 years. Back in 2003, the BC Liberals were in power. One of their highest ideals of the Gordon Campbell government was cutting red tape. And they did that in so many different ways. And you pinpoint professional reliance.
Yeah, well, I think gets to a much bigger question, right? Which is, what is the role of government? And what we saw occur provincially, in the lead up to the Campbell government years, we had a very prescriptive regime, if you will, under the NDP, beginning with Harcourt. I think. Exemplified in things like the Forest Practices Code Act, right? Then when the NDP were swept out of power in dramatic fashion in the first Campbell government, there was the pendulum swung very, very far over the other way. and we moved into a deregulated environment where professional reliance, became the rule, right? And most specific to communities and floodplain management, authority to issue authorizations on floodplains was effectively transferred from the provincial government to regional and local authorities. The provincial government walked away largely from that, and it became the responsibility of municipalities to do that work. But as I point out in my research, while that did occur, responsibility for the dikes remained with the local authorities, and it remained the purview of the provincial government to regulate. So while it is true that there may have been more and more of a reliance placed on outside professionals to make certain calls, oversight was to remain with the province. And this is where I think we're seeing problems, right? It's like the provincial government retained regulatory authority over the dikes. And what I wanted to test with this FOI was whether or not the government was exercising its powers. And what I think this research shows is that for whatever reasons, it has chosen not to use the regulatory power at its disposal to order corrective action.
That was Ben Parfit of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan destroys 54 million imported eggs. Eggs destroyed to protect farmers, but import policy said to have helped contain inflation. After an outbreak of avian flu caused shortages, the government decided to import eggs from 12 countries. However, the policy recently became the focus of controversy after expiry dates were mislabeled and doubts arose about the qualifications of some importers. At an impromptu news conference, the minister defended the policy, saying it had been successful in lowering prices for consumers while protecting the interests of farmers. In Kyoto news, 400,000 nuisance calls made to Japan embassy in China over Fukushima. On the back of growing anti-Japan sentiment in China, the daily number of harassing calls received by the embassy peaked at more than 40,000 on August 25th, a day after the ocean discharge started, and has stayed at around 10,000 recently. Similarly, Japan has experienced a surge in nuisance phone calls believed to originate from China, while also witnessing online appeals in China to boycott Japanese products. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Beijing demands consulates in Hong Kong submit data of all locally employed staff. Monday's letter, obtained by Hong Kong Free Press, gave each mission a month to submit the job titles, residential addresses, and identification details of all locally employed staff. It comes a year after Beijing demanded floor plans for each consulate's property. The letter was addressed to all foreign missions, including the European Union office, but did not state a reason for the data request. Under the city's mini-constitution, Beijing is in charge of foreign affairs relating to Hong Kong. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler weighs seizing control of all city bureaus. For more than a century, Portland's mayor and four city commissioners each controlled a subset of bureaus and departments in addition to their legislative duties, creating a municipal outlier among modern U.S. cities. That will change after the passage of Measure 26228, which, among other things, tasks a professional city administrator with overseeing Portland's vast bureaucracy. That person, as outlined by the measure, will be chosen by the mayor and approved by an expanded 12-person city council. In the Seattle Times, Seattle City Council passes drug ordinance that aligns with state. With the ordinance passing in a 6-3 vote, Seattle Police Department officers now have the ability to arrest people for using drugs in public, specifically in situations where they deem the person a threat to others. In instances where the person is instead considered a threat to themselves, an officer will be permitted to coordinate efforts for diversion, outreach, and other alternatives to arrest, according to the ordinance. The Seattle City Attorney's Office has not had the power to prosecute drug cases since 2012. In the Times Colonist, Port Alberni wildfires deemed suspicious. The fires were around Roger Creek, which is one of the three waterways that run through the city and is surrounded by brushy terrain that can be challenging for firefighting. The creek is one of the three waterways that run through the city. The largest of the fires, called in at about 9:30 p.m. on Sunday, was on a steep incline.
That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the 200,000 people involved in the delivery of essential goods, including food, medicine, and fuel, around British Columbia. It is Supply Chain Week in British Columbia from September 18th to 22nd.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
And they don't think you know, but I know that you do, 'cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, 'cause the rich men know the rich men.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 24th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 24th of September in 1996, 71 nations signed the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty at the United Nations? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. The free email newsletter, it's the best way to keep up with the Breaker.News while Facebook refuses to show Canadian news to Canadians because of the Trudeau Liberal government's Bill C-18. For news as it happens, you can follow the Breaker News on Twitter, and if you're outside Canada, visit the Breaker.News on Facebook. You can support the Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.